Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Let's go further afield. Let's take a look at the Israel report, which is, of course, brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israel's property management and sales.
The Israel report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Well, we're almost on the verge of Rosh Hashanah, and we're going to be talking a little about that later on, hopefully before I head off. But I just wanted to start out by posing a little teaser to the listeners, which we can come back to, which is that Rosh Hashanah is the only festival which is celebrated for 2 days in Israel. All the other festivals are one-day festival, which of course is contrary to the way that it's celebrated in South Africa, around the world, elsewhere in the diaspora. In Israel, all festivals are one-day except for Rosh Hashanah. So my question, and we have spoken about this, I think, in previous years, but my question is whether people can remember why in Israel we celebrate Rosh Hashanah for 2 days, the only festival for 2 days. So if people have got some memory or know about this, why don't you write in and we'll talk about it a little later.
34519 or 0618951019. Why is Rosh Hashanah celebrated in Israel for 2 days, yet all other festivals are for 1 day? Right, Anthony.
Exactly. As we head into Rosh Hashanah, of course, the world seems to be in turmoil around us. Russia, people are running away from Russia after the announcement yesterday by Vladimir Putin that he's going to be conscripting 300,000 reservists. It's really, really crazy. In Iran, uprising in Iran. I don't know if you guys have been following what's going on in Iran at the moment, but that incident where the woman was killed when she was being arrested for not wearing a hijab has resulted in demonstrations and uprisings across the country. And it's been fascinating to watch from a distance exactly what's going on in Iran. Yesterday, there were these incidents where people in towns and cities around Iran had bonfires in the streets, and there were pictures and movie clips of women dancing up to the bonfire and throwing their hijab into the bonfire as a protest against what's going on across Iran, anti-Islamic Republic demonstrations across the place. And I just wonder whether this little flame that's been ignited hasn't been waiting for ages and ages just to burst out. And this is just the issue that is being used to allow the Iranians to really express their frustration at what's happening within the Islamic Republic. Nothing to do with Israel, but of course always relevant, and we always watch that very, very keenly indeed.
Well, I was actually wondering about the Russian situation as well, where you have people trying to flee Russia in order to avoid conscription, and some of the scenes have been quite emotional and unnerving. What's Israel's involvement here? Will they get involved? Will they assist Jews in leaving? Obviously they have to play this very carefully.
Well, of course, all of this links very, very neatly to the fact that the Jewish Agency in Russia has effectively been disabled in terms of activities. Mm-hmm. And the latest that I heard on that particular subject, even though we didn't hear the result of the court application that was made in order to allow the Jewish Agency to continue its activities. But the latest I heard was that there's been a kind of a disconnect.
All right. Anthony, are you there? All right, we seem to have lost Anthony. We're going to get him back in just a moment. We're talking about, this is, of course, the Israel report. Jenny says, Howard, we are not complacent. We just keep telling ourselves, we're talking about South Africa, that we don't have power. We do have power. What we don't have is electricity. We should start changing our language. When you say something 120 times, you create a neutral pathway, and we don't believe that we actually have power. What do you think about that? An interesting one indeed. It is 7:46. Anthony Reich, Anthony, are you back with us?
Can you hear me now, Howard?
We can indeed.
Excellent. So I was just saying that the Jewish Agency activities in Russia have sort of been separated somehow in terms of communication with the Jewish agency in Israel. And I wonder whether that wasn't some sort of a precursor towards the possibility that the Russian government might have understood that some of these actions on their part would be coming in the future. And the last thing that they would want was to have this fleeing situation from Russia. And of course, the Jewish agency is very much available to help Jews leave Russia in the event that they wish to do so, of course, to come to Israel, not necessarily leave Russia, but more about coming to Israel. And I just wonder whether that wasn't something of a precursor, that they might not have had an inkling that this was coming down the line. But certainly the Jewish agency is there to help Jews who wish to come to Israel from wherever they want to come from, including from Russia. But of course, at the moment, activities in Russia are very, very much scaled down because of the lack of activity by the Jewish agency there.
Very concerning. Prime Minister Yair Lapid will deliver his first address to the plenum of the United Nations General Assembly later today. So what are we expecting to hear from him? Oh, I wonder why the line is, well, I know that some of the connections due to load shedding maybe aren't as good as they were. We wanted to know that from Anthony Reich. Prime Minister Yair Lapid will deliver his first address to the plenum of the United Nations. We want to know what that is about, what we can expect. We want to also cover the story of this woman that was killed in a terror attack in Holon on Wednesday. Her killer was found hanging near an apartment building in Tel Aviv. Anthony, for some reason, the line is just not cooperating today. Let's just talk about Minister Yair Lapid. What can we expect today?
So quite a lot has been written and said about what he might be saying at the United Nations General Assembly later today. For people who are eager to follow him speaking at the General Assembly, he's expected to speak sometime between 8 and 9 Israeli time today, which means between 7 and 8 South African time. I have little doubt that many Israelis will be watching him on TV. He's due to speak after the Sudanese president and before the Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea, his 13th on the agenda of the morning activities at the United Nations out of a total of 16 speeches that are due to be delivered in the morning, the US morning, at the United Nations. So we're expecting some time between 8 and 9 Israel time. And as I say, quite a lot has been written and said about what he's due to say at the United Nations. We understand that his speech will really have four legs to it. In the first section, he will talk about Iran, emphasizing that Israel will not allow the Islamic Republic to become a nuclear state, and really all about Iran. That will be the first part of his speech. The second part will be about delegitimization, and to effectively be telling the world that Israel are not guests at the United Nations and that Israel is a proud member of the international community and that Israel will always defend her good name and will not tolerate being delegitimized in the international community. We understand that the third part of his speech will be talking about the Abraham Accords and about Israel's relationships within the Middle East. And finally, Yair Lapid is due to talk about the two-state solution and to recommend again that Israel should move towards a two-state solution. So we understand that that is going to be the main structure of what he will be saying later today. He has come under a lot of criticism about the two-state solution, and quite interestingly, former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, and of course fellow coalition leader Naftali Bennett, has come out saying, why would he say that? Why would he talk about the two-state solution at the United Nations? And it's really not a necessary statement to be making. And I guess that really shows what is different about Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett, and when they came together, why we thought that was potentially not such a marriage made in heaven, because they do come from different places. And I think that this really emphasizes their differences rather than the things that they have in common. But quite fascinatingly, it was opposition leader Benjamin Netanyahu who came out saying, why would Yair Lapid talk about the two-state solution? Apparently Netanyahu has a very short memory, because if we roll back to 2016 at the United Nations General Assembly plenum, it was the then Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu who said, we should be ready to move to the two-state solution right away in his speech. So he has a little bit of a short memory because he's absolutely said that at the United Nations, and those people who are interested can find his speech on YouTube. It's easily available and just reminded of what he said 6 years ago. But apparently that's what Yair Lapid is going to be talking about. And just fascinatingly, very quickly, because I know we've lost quite a lot of time, in his meeting with British Prime Minister Liz Truss yesterday, it was interesting that Liz Truss raised the possibility of reviewing the location of the UK embassy from Tel Aviv, where it currently is located, to possibly putting it in Jerusalem. Now, Liz Truss, when she was the Foreign Secretary, did speak about this particular point and did suggest that the British government would be weighing this up. But it's interesting that now that she is Prime Minister, that she's raised it again with Prime Minister Yair Lapid, and she's said quite forcefully that she hasn't said that they will move the embassy, but she's definitely given indication to the fact that the UK government, the British government, is willing to at least review the situation. And that's not an insignificant development.
It really is quite incredible, though. Really an amazing thing that this is even on the table, whether it ultimately happens or not. Can we just talk about that bizarre story yesterday? A woman was killed in a terror attack in Holon. Her killer was found hanging near an apartment building in Tel Aviv. What is the story?
So the story is that on Tuesday, there was an incident in Holon where an elderly woman was attacked in the street and ultimately died from this attack. And there was speculation at the time as to whether this was something criminal or whether this was a terror-related attack. In the end, the police came out quite forcefully saying that this attack, which was just a single individual who attacked this elderly woman in the street, that this was definitely a terror-instigated attack. And then they managed to get a clip, managed to get some photographs of the individual from some of the cameras that were installed around the place. And they identified him as being a 20-year-old person who comes from Qalqilya. And apparently he was in Israel with permission. So it wasn't as if though he had somehow crossed illegally into Israel. Apparently he was one of those people who did have permission. He was not on the radar of the security services, and yet he came into the city of Holon, attacked this woman, and unfortunately killed her in the process. That was on Tuesday. Then yesterday, we had a strange incident of a resident in Tel Aviv claiming that they could see from their apartment windows the body of a person hanging. And it turns out that it was the same individual, the terrorist who attacked this woman in Holon, apparently had made his way to Tel Aviv and somehow got into the yard of this particular apartment building and hanged himself in the yard of this building so that he could be plainly seen in sight by the windows of the people who lived in that apartment building. And of course, the WhatsApp group of that particular apartment building blew up with people making comments. Apparently, even when the police were called to attend to this incident, they took their time in removing the body of this individual, and there was no warning to say, stay away from your windows or whatever, don't come out. But he was in plain sight of everybody. So, of course, that caused a lot of consternation for those residents in the apartment building. But we understand that it's definitely the same individual. And then when his family were taken in for questioning, it turns out that they claim at least that he was suffering from mental problems. So it's very, very hard to try and understand what might have instigated all of this very, very bizarre behavior. But we do know, unfortunately, that one elderly woman was killed in the process. And of course, this individual has lost his life when he hanged himself.
What a sad story all round. Really just simply awful. And let's change things up a little bit. Let's talk about Rosh Hashanah. So first of all, why is it, Anthony, that Rosh Hashanah is 2 days and not 1 day?
So for those people who had to think about it, the only festival that we celebrate which ties in with the start of a Jewish month is Rosh Hashanah. Now, in days gone by when we didn't have fancy calendars that could work things out to a millisecond, the way in which generally the festivals were determined was according to the new moon. As soon as the new moon was seen, then Rosh Chodesh was declared, so we knew that it was the new month. And once we were already into the new month, it was easy to count the days to the 15th of the month or whenever the festival falls, so we could then be absolutely sure about what day the festival falls. But when you are looking out for the new moon, and the festival also falls whenever you see the new moon, and that day might be today, it might be yesterday, it might be tomorrow, then that is the situation where it became a little bit uncertain as to which day should be the festival day, and hence Rosh Hashanah being the only festival that also coincides with Rosh Chodesh, with the new month, happens to fall out for 2 days, even in Israel. So that's the reason why we celebrate 2 days in Israel. And of course, as you mentioned yesterday, we like to look at numbers and statistics and names and all kinds of other things at this time of year. And it's interesting that the Israeli population is now set at 9.5 million residents, of which 7 million are Jews, almost 7.1 million, approximately 2 million are Arabs, and about 500,000 everybody else, Christians, Druze, whoever, other people living in Israel. So I know that we've got this kind of magical 6 million number in the back of our minds because, of course, that was the number that was lost in the Shoah. And Israeli Jews now number 7 million. So we're really past that. And according to the estimations, we're going to be moving towards an overall population of 10 million within the next 2 years, by the end of 2024, which is a really remarkable thing when you think about where we've come from and where we happen to be right now. Interestingly, that 63,000 new immigrants came to Israel during the course of the last calendar year, the last Jewish year, of which 59,000, we understand, were fueled by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So just back to the subject that we spoke about earlier, about people coming not only from Ukraine, but also from Belarus and also from Russia and also from areas around that, almost 60,000 people came to make Israel their home during the course of the year. So I think the Israeli population is looking pretty healthy, and we are very, very pleased, of course, to welcome new people to come and live in Israel. Whatever the reason may be for their decision to come here, it's always welcome. And, of course, we are very well geared up to cope with the new immigrants who come. And, of course, we're moving into the year, which is 5783 in the Hebrew calendar. In Hebrew, when we write the year, of course, we write it with letters. So it's Tafshin Pei Gimel, which are the letters that make up actually 783. We don't have, when we usually write the year in Hebrew, we don't mention the five. The five is kind of left off. So 783 is Tafshin Pei Gimel. That will be our new year. And we also wanted to know some information about names that people are calling their children and what are the most popular names. Interestingly, in Israel, through all the years since the founding of the state, the most commonly given name is Muhammad. And of course, that comes from the Arab population because it is just so dominant within the Arab community, even though they're a minority, that is the main name, but the most popular name. But interestingly, from Jewish boys who were born in Israel since the founding of the state, the most popular name is Moshe. And that is a name, sorry, not Moshe, let me start again. The most popular name is David. That was the most popular name at the beginning, at the founding of the state of Israel. It went down in its popularity somewhat, and it's now returned back to be super popular over the last year or two, David. Then we are followed with Moshe. And in third place, we have Yosef, which is a very interesting combination of names. Amongst the girls, it's been a lot more up and down in terms of what was popular then and what's popular now. But we still understand that the name Noah is the one that has been most commonly chosen across the ages, even though it's more recent rather than historical. The name Noah is most popular for the girls. And it's apparently, we understand that Noah Kirel is a very, very popular Israeli artist, has contributed towards a lot of girls being called Noah recently. Coming in second is Rachel, and that is followed by Yael in terms of the girls' names. So all that remains is for me to wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Shana Tova, and I look forward to being back on Wednesday to talk about how Rosh Hashanah went for you and, of course, for us.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Thank you for an incredible year of reporting, bringing us the information from Israel, accurate, detailed information from Israel on a daily basis. We greatly appreciate it. Wishing you and your family a Shana Tova, a blessed and wonderful year ahead. That was the Israel Report, brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.